News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
Morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5, 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. We are joined on the phone with for the City of Mobile, Director of Public Safety, Lawrence Batiste, and we're going to hit on a number of subjects. Director, good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing this morning?
We are doing just fine. Of course, top of mind for all Mobilians is the shooting at Ladd People Stadium on Friday night. Where are the facts as we know them right now?
So the facts as we know them right now are, you know, we have three individuals that we believe to be involved in the incident, and of course, and we have five victims. So our prayers goes out to the family of those victims. But I think that with the help of the public and the work of the men and women of the MPD, we've identified the individuals that we believe to be responsible for the incident. And we also believe it to be an isolated incident. And we actually have two of the individuals in custody, and we're working on taking the third individual. We have active warrants for Mr. Belfon. There are five active attempted murder warrants for him.
Director Batiste, quick work on Friday night as an image was distributed of the three suspects. And I know you guys have worked quickly to get two of the three in custody. The big question for so many Mobilians now is, you know, exactly how did they get through and into Ladd Peebles with that firearm? What's the discussion been like regarding the security at Ladd Peebles?
You know, because of incidents like this, you're always going back and revisiting your security protocols. You know, when the incident occurred back in 2019, we put some security protocols in place that we believe that would enhance our ability to prevent these type of things from occurring. But the best made plan sometimes needs tweaking. And so as a result of the incident that occurred this past weekend, we are back at the table looking again at things that we can do to enhance the security protocols at those type of events. And I believe that as from a broader view of what we're going to do with our cybersecurity personnel, that we'll be able to enhance that ability. And again, you know, we were able to apprehend these individuals much quicker this time simply because of some of the protocols we did put in place. But again, there are failures in that protocol that we need to enhance and to strengthen.
So, Director Batiste, were the protocols at fault, like not strong enough, or was there a lack of execution?
Sometimes, you know, we're still investigating those things to see, was it a lack of execution or was it, you know, a failure of the protocols itself? So that part is still being investigated at this point.
Understood.
We're talking with Mobile's Public Safety Director, Lawrence Batiste, and this happened Friday night, and, you know, it's been a tough year, not just for Mobile, for the nation as a whole, as far as crime is concerned, violent crime, Director Batiste. But in Mobile, the numbers have been pretty high, and it seems time and time again that it's these young men, whether they're in their late teens or early 20s, and shooting at each other, and so often innocents get hurt. I mean, we've seen this time and time again this year.
I would agree with that, and, you know, we've looked at a number of different things that we've tried to work with families in the community to try to get them to be engaged. You know, there, oftentimes when we're dealing with situations like this, somebody knows that there's a problem that's occurring. And the problem is this, is people are not speaking up. I mean, particularly those that are most impacted by these type of behavior, their lack of demeanor, their lack of candor to come forward and say, hey, this is going on in my community. Subsequently, what you end up is in most cases, you either end up with somebody dead, and then you end up with somebody going to prison. In this particular case, you've got five individuals that were traumatized by gunfire, and they're dealing with, you know, the wounds that they received. But we've got three individuals that's going to be going to prison, and so that's very impactful to any community. And so we need parents, and we need, you know, grandparents, we need friends, anybody that knows about these particular type beefs that are occurring between these individuals to speak up so that we can maybe resolve it before it gets to the point where we're shooting at one another.
It seems like these disputes, they bypass police action altogether and just try to, it's definitely, I'm going to get you or you're going to get me. Am I close?
I think you're very close. I think that a lot of it surrounds, you know, again, you know, you've often heard me say, talk about conflict resolution. I don't think that that we've done a really good job. And I say we because the community as a whole has some responsibility into it. You know, our schools are doing everything that they can. I think quite frankly, I think there's a breakdown in the parental unit at home. And, you know, they know about these conflicts. And again, you know, how do they teach their children to deal with the conflicts? You know, when a young man is, you know, has a gun, you know, my parents would have known that if I had access to a gun, you know, even if I had tried to hide it, they would have been a little bit more engaged in that part of the process. And again, I think a lot of parents have advocated their responsibility as it relates to raising their children and holding their children accountable for their behavior.
Director Batiste, you referenced it earlier, but this shooting Friday night was a game between Vigor and Williamson at Ladd Peebles. That shooting from just a couple years ago was LaFleur and Williamson at Ladd Peebles. Obviously, the two constants there, Williamson was in the game, and it happened at Ladd Peebles. What kind of role does the city of Mobile play in whether these games go on at Ladd, or is that even the issue at hand? Are we worried about future games at Ladd Peebles Stadium?
You know, as I think about the games at Ladd Peebles Stadium, I think that's as we think about high school games, I think that's something that the school board will have to make a decision about how they want to proceed moving forward with hosting games at Ladd Stadiums. I think in general, Ladd is a safe environment. I think when you look at the dynamics of certain games in particular, take the Gulf Coast Classic. I mean, a very huge gathering at Ladd Stadium during that weekend, no incidents that I can think of that occurred during that time period. I think that sometimes that when you're dealing with, again, neighborhood beefs or young kids that have, you know, no real agenda to do anything to improve our community, but to try to take their neighborhood disputes, and they take them to a venue, and then, of course, the lack of maturity and know how to deal with, you know, confrontation, and then they have these type of incidents that occur. And unfortunately, Williamson happened to be the one constant. But again, I don't know that in particular the individuals that were involved, one was from Vigor, at least we know went to Vigor, and the other potentially was a student at Williamson. But they were not, they were not athletes. They didn't really have any real reason to be there other than just, you know, they're not really doing anything. As a boy growing up, my parents told me, if you're going to go to school, you're going to be involved in something. So you need to get engaged in some type of extracurricular activity. So you'll have a reason to want to be part of the tradition of that school and to enhance the tradition of that school. Again, parents aren't doing those things now. They let the kid go to school, and if they want to go to school, they go. And if they don't, no big deal to them. But they don't do anything to enhance the overall environment of the school that they're attending.
This is let's end it on this, Director Batiste. This is obviously a national problem that has been going on. You know, you have COVID, you've got the George Floyd incident, and you had a lot of outrage. You have a lot of people who've got a lot of idle time. You've got a perfect storm for all this. But since this is a national problem, are there any communities or cities out there that you're seeing are doing a better job of beginning to corral this problem than any others, where we could learn from them?
You know, I haven't seen anybody that come up with, I guess, what we would call the magic potion to move us forward. I think a lot of people are trying to do a lot of different things, like we're trying to do here locally. And, you know, we've for years worked with Bridging the Gap. We have many programs that focus on pulling our young people together and creating forums to have open dialogue and discussions about things that they want. But, you know, people will say that there's nothing to do in Mobile, and, you know, I know there's plenty of things that I have seen happen from weekend to weekend here in the city of Mobile. I think you have to find that thing that interests you, and I think that you have to get engaged and get involved. And until our young people start looking at things that truly interest them and really get involved with doing those things, they'll always say that there's nothing to do. I also believe that, again, that parents are going to have to take a more active role in steering their children in the direction of being good stewards and good being valued to our community, because if they don't, then they continue down this path. And our community suffers when those things happen. We have a lot of great people in this community that do a lot of great things. Subsequently, we have about 5 to 10% of the people in our community that just refuses to move towards the center and trying to make sure that our community continues to grow and continue to do the things to enhance it.
Well said. One last question for you, Public Safety Director Batiste. It's been a heck of a first week for new Mobile Police Chief Paul Prine, and I know he has two former chiefs at arm's reach, within arm's reach, in you and former Chief James Barber. What do you think about him coming into that role, and how do you think he will fill that role as police chief going forward?
Well, I'll tell you, unfortunately, this incident occurred within his first week, but I am extremely proud of the way he's handled himself and how he's reached out to the community, tried to calm the community. So I think he'll do a really great role, a really great job. I think he has a great team of individuals there, a good supporting cast. And I think that as they work together, as they continue to try to figure out, where the weak points are, they'll pull things together. And I think that we'll continue to move forward as a city.
Director of Public Safety is Lawrence Batiste. He joined us this morning on Mobile Mornings, and we certainly appreciate your time and your demeanor.
Well, thank you guys for inviting us and giving us an opportunity to have a say.
You got it.
Thank you. Public Safety Director Lawrence Batiste on with us this morning. We talked with Chad Petrie from KRG earlier about the latest regarding the Lad People shooting, and now it's time to talk to you. 343-0106 to jump online.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 822. We're checking the text line here, also turning up your voice, 343-0106. And also, if you leave any voicemails, you can do that on the app.
Mm-hmm.
We can play those back, and that can be part of our show. Meanwhile, we got to face it head on. It's the Dalton's really catching it on the text line. It's all got to do with the Atlanta Braves controversy.
Oh, boy.
Where are the Braves playing today?
Mm-hmm.
Not a very forgiving audience this morning. You made one little misstep, and they are crawling all over you.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll take you back to the sports report that I did three times this morning. And each time I said, this afternoon, the Atlanta Braves looking to go up 3-0. I said they would be playing at Truist Park at 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very incorrect on that.
Dead wrong.
No, they're actually in L.A. So they're playing against the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium at 4 o'clock Central Time. And I just wanted to take this time to, apologize on behalf of everyone here at FM Talk 106.5 for that massive, massive mistake that was made this morning. You wouldn't know that I've watched as many Braves games this year as I could. One little geographic mistake, Dan, and I'm hearing from it.
And I was looking at the text line saying, good Lord.
if you don't think there's some Braves fans in our area.
If you don't think there's some people critical of the two of us in our area, check out our text line. They were just really hot under the collar that you got the city wrong. But nobody watches them closer than you. And so that game, 4 o'clock today, Dodger Stadium.
Yep, looking to go up 3-0. I won a little bit of money those first two games.
So there you go.
I was just hoping that they would continue to play in Atlanta.
Gambling the kids' higher education away.
That's exactly right. Or winning their higher education.
Well,
you're always so cynical.
Well, it's 824 at FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, getting a lot of Go Braves texts this morning, so I know a lot of people are looking forward to that. Also, I've got some news from big cities across the United States, and each of these stories I think shows you in their own way how ridiculous things are getting, especially in our liberal-led cities. And thankful that this isn't happening in Alabama, although we do have our own problems, as you could tell from that first segment with Public Safety Director Lawrence Batiste.
Mm-hmm.
But take a look in Philadelphia, where we know that the defund the police movement hasn't worked out very well, because a lot of these cities that said they would defund the police are now having to refund
mm-hmm.
the police.
Yeah.
And in Philadelphia, they decided, we don't care about minor traffic violations anymore. We're going to let you slide for a minor infraction. Now, of course, the big question is, what's that line between a minor traffic infraction and a major?
I'd like to know. That's not a little question. So where is the line, and what's considered minor?
So the city council in Philadelphia, which I'm sure is as right-wing as they come, right?
Surely not.
That's a joke. They passed a bill that bans traffic stops for minor violations. They say such as having a broken taillight or not having certain stickers displayed. I'm sure it's like, in some of these states, they make sure that your vehicle is fit for the road or your license plate is up to date. Drivers who are guilty of these violations will now instead receive a warning or a citation in the mail. Councilmember Curtis Jones Jr. is a co-sponsor of the Driving Equality Bill. He said, so an expired license plate or fuzzy dice in the mirror isn't a death sentence. that it can be in some cases. They said they reviewed 2.8 million stops and found that Philadelphia police pull over a disproportionate number of black drivers for minor violations. And the bill is headed to the mayor of Philadelphia, Jim Kenney, who is expected to sign it into law. But that's the question, right? Is a rolling stop through a stop sign a minor traffic violation? What if you just blow through a red light? Will they pull you over and stop you for that? Because, I mean, I referenced some of the numbers earlier regarding Teen Safety Driving Week. So many deaths in the states are from
involving teen drivers.
Involving teen drivers, but really, you know, vehicle accidents as a whole. And so many times it's people that it starts with a minor traffic violation, or you have these huge drug busts or other fines that result from some of these smaller stops, like someone running through a stop sign.
So has anybody noticed in call or text 343-0106 this kind of nonsense on the road going on around Mobile today? I've noticed young drivers that are just kind of rolling right through red lights.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed drivers who are kind of weaving the car to go along with whatever mood they're in, I suppose.
Yeah.
But almost just being blatant in disregarding the natural ways that we're supposed to behave on the road.
Yeah. Has it gotten worse?
Because it's gotten worse to me.
I think so.
Yeah. Of course, I'm on the board at Light of the Village, which is in Alabama Village, which is in Pritchard. And they're having a heck of a time, not just in Alabama Village, with drivers driving very unsafely.
Yeah.
In a way that they're just kind of sticking it to the man, like, hey, anything you can do about me? And in Philadelphia, they're relinquishing their power to say, go ahead and act that way?
Yeah.
I'd be careful.
Said they're going to send you something in the mail instead
of
arresting you or just pulling you over for the ticket. Then in California, Governor Gavin Newsom, fresh off of his recall election win, signed a bill into law this month, and it forbids the sale of new gas-powered lawn equipment. It goes into effect January 1st of 2024, and they will phase out the sale of new gas-powered equipment. So you could go to a Home Depot or Lowe's beginning in 2024, which is right around the corner. I mean, we're a year and a half, two and a half years away from that, and you won't be able to buy a gas-powered engine anymore. So I guess, and maybe I've had poor luck with the battery-powered lawn equipment that I've bought over the years, I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it. It just doesn't have the power. You know, after 30 minutes, if you only have one battery, at least the brand I bought,
you're done.
Yeah. Right? And we all know there's a lot more landscaping that needs to be done in most houses, more than 30 minutes of weed eating. But, you know, they have huge landscape crews in California, just like every state. Are they expecting these big landscaping crews to just use battery-powered equipment? I guess they are. Stores with 500 or more employees, also another bill signed into law. They have to provide gender-neutral toy aisles in California beginning in 2024. There's Philly and there's California for you. And then in New York City, the city council there has voted to remove a statue of Thomas Jefferson. This statue sits at the New York City Council's chambers at City Hall. It's a 187-year-old statue. It's been in the City Hall in New York City since 1833. And the city council said because Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, regardless of being a founding father, they want him out, and they're putting him in a museum instead.
So are we really getting to whatever ills of our society are by grandstanding and doing things like that? You know what I mean? I mean, don't we have bigger
fish to fry?
Fine. We can have that conversation for sure. But when it's the biggest conversation, when it takes up all the space in problem solving and what's really a problem in our cities, that's ridiculous. It's 830 FM Talk 106.5. Text line.
He's coming for you, huh?
I don't know how somebody with such a beautiful name could be such a moron, but he's checking all the boxes. It's 8:35 at FM Talk 106.5, and we've got Quinn Hillier on the line from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Post.
Washington Examiner.
Yeah,
be very careful with that one. You know, the Post, most conservative writers don't want to write for the Post. I'm sure. Is that right, Quinn?
Maybe they can have one on there to balance it out.
It would be great if the Post would run more conservative
exactly.
writers, and conservative writers should love to be able to not preach to the choir, but actually try to win converts.
Yeah.
I actually wrote for the Post way back when. I wrote sports for them for just a tiny little bit.
Oh, really? That's,
yes.
That's a
Washington Post
politics for him.
Washington Post sports writer, Quinn Hillier.
Yeah, peek into the past of Quinn Hillier. And I'm going to read a surprising that we said that. I'm going to read a Washington Post headline for you here in just a minute. But first, let folks know where they can buy your trilogy, the Mad Jones trilogy. It's available on Amazon, right?
Yes, indeed. Mad Jones Heretic, Mad Jones Hero, and Mad Jones Agonistes on Amazon.
So we want to get into the Federal Reserve in a little bit. Also, of course, Manchin and the Democrats trying to figure out where they can, you know, come to terms on this spending bill. But this Washington Post headline, and it's an opinion piece. I need to look up who wrote this opinion piece. But it's regarding the supply chain woes that we're going through or we're about to go through here in America. And here's the headline, Quinn. Don't rant about short-staffed stores and supply chain woes. Try to lower expectations. So is that what it's come to? Is it our fault that the supply chain isn't moving the way it should? Should we lower our expectations for this Christmas and the rest of the holiday season?
No, we should not. And that sounds exactly like Jimmy Carter's malaise speech. That's exactly what Jimmy Carter was saying back in 1979. And it's why he got booted out of office, or part of the reason. We don't need to lower our expectations. We need to have public officials meet our expectations and stop. And part of that is means getting out of the bleeping way. Stop trying to micromanage things from Washington, D.C. Stop trying to solve all the problems of the world from Washington, D.C., but spending oodles and gazillions of dollars doing it, which, of course, doesn't actually help the problem, but it puts us into debt and causes inflation. The problem is in Washington, D.C., from people who are too who don't have enough humility to know that that maybe the public knows better than they do about how to run our own lives.
Yeah, that's, you know, the examples that Dalton was pointing out are cringeworthy, certainly. And just the idea that, like Dalton said, yeah, you can't get a turkey this Thanksgiving, but hey, it's your own fault.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Well, it's our own fault because maybe suddenly 225 years of being an evil nation is catching up with it with us. Apparently, that's what the left believes,
right?
That, you know, that this is a nation that was irredeemably evil from the start, or almost irredeemably evil. Certainly hasn't been redeemed yet, and now this is just the chickens coming home to roost. Of course, that's balderdash. It's total BS. But that's what they believe, and I'm sick of it.
Meanwhile, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, you know, we have a trucker staffing problem. That's part of the reason there's so many backups at these ports. You have these cargo ships sitting off the coast of L.A. and beyond other ports.
And remarkably, he's blaming that on success.
Yeah, he said it's because of the success of the Biden administration. I want to hear your take on him saying that, but also – Buttigieg has been on 2 months of paternity leave during a national crisis. What do you make of that?
It's obscene. You do not need paternity leave when you are heading a major federal agency. You can certainly afford to take care of things, by having having somebody else look after the child that you have taken care of. You've got the means to do it. But meanwhile, if you take a job like this, that's not something where you're just a cog in the machine.
Mm-hmm.
You are responsible for a major part of the U.S. economy, and it is absolutely irresponsible for him to do this.
Yeah, they say they're trying to send a message that paternity leave should be necessity, and that everyone should get paternity leave, not just wives and mothers and maternity leave. Another big excuse that's come out for these supply chain woes, the Biden administration saying, well, there's one easy fix to all of our problems in the United States. And that's if we just pass these spending bills that are a combined $4.7 trillion. We've talked over the last few weeks about how the guns are out for the liberals as they go after Manchin and Sinema and try to get them to vote with the rest of the Democrats. One of your more recent articles on QuinnHillier.com, Manchin should leave the Dems and what 10 other Democrats should do. What do you think about this whole Manchin back and forth with Schumer and Pelosi and the rest of the Democrats?
They are playing with fire. I think they are pushing Joe Manchin inexorably away from the party. I could easily see him deciding to leave the Democratic Party, become an independent, and either caucus with nobody or caucus with the Republicans, either one of which would suddenly make Mitch McConnell, not Chuck Schumer, the majority leader of the Senate. I also could see Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona doing something similar. She was so mad at Joe Biden that, I mean, this is unheard of for a senator to refuse to take a president's call. But when those horrible protesters went into the bathroom and filmed her going into the stall and harangued her, mm-hmm. and Joe Biden said, well, of course they shouldn't do that, but, and then he said about five times in various ways, that's part of the process. That's part of the process. You got to get used to it. That made her so mad she won't even take his calls. She might switch to independent as well. And I'm not predicting it, but I'm saying that the Democrats are playing with fire because they are leaving Sinema and Manchin very little other choice. And if they do that, they completely lose control of the Senate, and that would be a wonderful thing.
Could that happen? Could they make the switch to the Republican Party?
Well, I didn't say to the Republican. They would switch to independent.
Okay.
And either just not caucus with anybody,
mm-hmm.
or caucus with Republicans, just like Angus King of Maryland, of Maine, who calls himself an independent, caucuses with the Democrats, so he might as well be one. Manchin could caucus with the Republicans for purposes of committee seats and the like, and that would give Republicans a 51-49 edge in the Senate.
Well, do you think we're closer to maybe a kind of de facto more moderate third party there, as you mentioned, them maybe switching over to independents? I'm thinking of the 9 Republicans who kind of helped write one of those spending bills, Mitt Romney being one of them, and a lot of people on the right would say, hey, we don't want them in the party either. So you add those 9 to the 2 there in Sinema and Manchin, and I know many people have discussed that we need more than 2 parties in the United States. Could that kind of happen because of all this back and forth?
Well, it could, and you've got a lot of people debating, like Jonah Goldberg, formerly of National Review, now with the Dispatch, a very prominent conservative voice, is now advocating a third party. So is Philip K. Howard, or he's at least, he's this longtime reformer who most people think of as leaning right. Andrew Yang from the left, who ran for president, is talking about a third party. A lot of people are talking about it now, and both parties better beware that they don't push their moderates into a third party or some sort of independent force, because then you don't know which way the wind will blow. You don't know how the eggs will break. I can use any other metaphors, but it could play to either party's advantage, to neither party's advantage. You just don't know what the fallout will be.
If you had to try to predict the future of this spending bill, I guess these 2 spending bills, the infrastructure and human infrastructure bill, where do you think that line is for Manchin and Sinema? Or do you think that before midterms, nothing gets done? What are you seeing there?
I don't know. And first of all, I refuse to call the other one human infrastructure. That's bunk. Yeah. It's a massive government takeover of major parts of the economy. It's a massive debt bill. It's a massive social spending bill for problems that don't even really exist or that barely exist to the degree the Democrats want it. But to the point of your question, I really don't know. Right now, I would say that there is maybe a slightly better than 50% chance that at some point the real or the semi-infrastructure bill, the roads, bridges, plus all sorts of pork passes. There is about a 40% chance that the other one passes, but only if it's reduced to no more than $1.5 trillion, which is still, by the way, an insane amount of money.
Yeah.
But, anyway, so slightly better than 50, and then 40%, but only if it's reduced by more than a half.
Quinn, getting back to the people considering going independent or people talking about a third party, just historically, what are the conditions when this conversation comes up? Is it always the same? Is it sometime very different? Is it just give me a historic perspective on this third party conversation?
Well, no third party has really worked or survived since before the Civil War. In fact, since really about the 1820s, and you know, you occasionally get third parties that spring up and that take a little of the vote away here and a little of the vote away there on a presidential level, but none of them last, or at least none of them last as significant factors. When they spring up is usually when the parties, the two main parties, are not, how do I put it, they're not reaching broadly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's one way. Another way is if you have a fringe third or fourth party, when it's somebody on the extreme and they just have their own tiny little set of issues and they want to, you know, they want to basically stomp their feet.
Mm-hmm.
But a broad-based, I mean, a third party that actually has some kind of effect usually comes up somewhere in the middle, and it usually comes up, stays around, gets about 6 or 7% of the vote in an election, and then dies.
Right. Hey, Quinn, we appreciate you being so flexible with your time this morning. You're going to be taking part in a public forum tonight. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. This is with Coastal Conversations, which is a group of, you know, very it's organized by some of the leading foundations around here and other public-spirited people to have a series of conversations on coastal issues, yeah. Obviously. And tonight at the McQueen Center at University of South Alabama, we're having one on health disparities or health care disparities, how to make sure that people, especially at the low end of the income scale, have access to decent health care in Alabama. It's very locally focused. And the moderator is going to be Cynthia Tucker, who was a Pulitzer Prize winner when she was the editorial page editor of the Atlanta Constitution. But she's a Mobilian, and she's actually here now. And then I'm on it, sort of from the right, the Representative Anthony Daniels, who is head of the, I believe, the Democratic caucus in the state legislature, very, very, very constructive voice there, very thoughtful. And then Dr. Errol Crook, who is the head of the USA Center for Health Communities. And this is, again, it's at the McQueen Center night. You got to sign up, but you can also watch on Facebook or YouTube. And just go to, if you Google Coastal Conversations and click on the top link, you'll see how to watch on Facebook and YouTube.
All right. Quinn, thanks for your time this morning, and good luck with that tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. FM Talk 106.5, 849. We ran a little late with that one, but back with the end of the show, we'll also let you know what Jeff Poore's got on the way and who he's got on the way coming up next. Talk 106.5. It's 8:54. Up next is the Jeff Poore Show. Dan Gaynor from the Media Research Center. Also Josh Moon, Alabama political reporter, among the guests. David Sessions, a state senator from down to the south end of the county. He'll be also with Jeff in the 11 o'clock hour here on FM Talk 106.5.
I got a few things to talk about with you, Dan, here in this last segment. First, I want to get everyone's take on former President Donald Trump. You know, he's been in the news a lot more mm-hmm. recently. And he was on with Bill O'Reilly. That's a blast from the not-so-distant past. You know, he has a show now on The First TV. That's the name of the station that O'Reilly is on now. But he asked Trump on Monday night about the vaccine mandates. And Trump basically said, listen, there was no talk of mandates when I was in office. We wouldn't have had to do a vaccine mandate. Here was his specific quote. He said, I wouldn't say to anybody, you have to, but I would sell it. Look, I'm very proud of what we did with the vaccine. So Trump says he's enough of a salesman that he could have convinced the American people to get vaccinated. He said it was supposed to take 5 years, and they said it wasn't going to work. I did three vaccines in less than 9 months, and they do work. They work really well. So Trump, of course, and I think he deserves that to say, listen, I made the wheels turn. Mm-hmm. I made this vaccine get out there as soon as it did. But wouldn't it be an interesting study, a hindsight study, if Trump had won re-election and, you know, get past all the voting and everything and how that all went down.
But he won. He's back. Or he never left office.
Never left. But just specifically about the vaccines, would we be going through the exact same thing where a large segment of the population refuses? And when I say large segment, what, 19% of Americans have yet to have one shot? So there's
almost everybody's on board.
Exactly. I mean, a vast majority of people have been at least half vaccinated.
Yes.
So would we be dealing with the same thing now, except would there be more liberals?
Would be on the, I don't want the vaccine.
Right, because it's a Trump vaccine. Mm-hmm. Just like the president and vice president said during their campaign. And I know what the national media would be doing. They would be doing the exact opposite of what they're doing right now. They'd say, yeah, you should be worried about this vaccine. I mean, Trump made it, for God's sakes.
I guess they would be, but, Fauci was in Trump's administration when all this broke. Of course, he was a name we didn't know. That's a real interesting proposition. I'm not sure exactly where all this would go. And how about the guy turning down $3 million not to get vaccinated?
Yeah, the Washington State coach, what's his name? Rolovich at Washington State, because that's, the governor there, Inslee, required state employees to get vaccinated. Just like so many other states, the college coach there is the highest paid state employee at $3 million a year. And yeah, he said he wasn't going to get vaccinated. So they said, you're out. And so are four of your assistants who feel the same way.
That's incredible. $3 million, and that's just an annual salary, meaning he's probably got a contract that guarantees him more than just this year.
Yeah.
And he's decided to walk away from that job. What, y'all, on the text line, what would your price be? If you are pretty much like, no, I don't want to get the vaccine. If they said to you, we're going to sweeten the pot here a little bit. Yeah, how much? $3 million. Yeah.
My price tag would be three for sure.
you've gotten one dose.
Yeah.
So you can still, you're among those that the one dosers.
I'm for sale. $3 and I will come to your pharmacy and get that second.
But that
dose
is remarkable.
It is. And I know a lot of people would think he's stupid for doing that. Regardless of how you feel about the vaccines, that is a man who is sticking to his convictions, right?
And evidently, he's got a very, very understanding wife.
Yeah.
Because he's walking away from $3 million. I mean, he got a job that was a life changer, and now on vaccines alone, he's decided to turn his back on the money and on the job.
Exactly. Yeah, I think he'll eventually be hired somewhere. And then a quick story here. We can really break this down tomorrow. They did a study of the each state's most popular hot sauce.
Mm.
Frank's Red Hot coming in hot in Alabama. That is apparently the number one hot sauce when polled. Alabamians
say they do that all the time. The favorite in Nebraska is this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't Texas Pete.
So Cholula is the most popular. Basically, every state west of Texas and Oklahoma, except for California, they're a Tapatio town. There, Texas Pete along the eastern coast.
Mm.
But Frank's Red Hot through the South and Midwest. Interesting. I'm a Texas Pete guy myself.
I've never used hot sauce in my life.
Really?
Yep. There's a confession. 8:59.
Wow.